She's a runner. She's a dancer. She's a track star. She went to the gym this morning. How do you feel?
Like I went to the gym. A little bit gross.
A little bit gross, a little bit sweaty.
Super sweaty, girlfriend.
Oh, kind of a dream.
Kind of a dream. Looking good, feeling good. No, it's always good to be back. And I'm very weak, I noticed. So I went in and was like, wow, I can't do any of this. So I was like, you know what? Everyone starts somewhere. And after the summer, when you don't go to the gym... Like, I tried to walk a lot, but I didn't do,
weights.
I don't know, calisthenics or weights, and it's like you come in and you're like, this is a challenge. I am weak again, and it's so weird that you can't get a pass on that if you work hard most of the year. You just are starting from scratch a little bit.
I'm actually not interested in hearing that right now. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't feel like I'm in a place where I want to hear that, but I support that for you. Mm-hmm. I've been riding my bike up to your place, and it is such an intense uphill climb both ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that's good for me. I think that's good for me, but it's hard. And I did last night. I went down and I hung out with the boys. We had a lot of laughs. We giggled. We kikied. We talked. It was great fun. I had a great time.
Good.
No notes.
Yeah.
No notes.
They're leaving town soon.
I know, they're going on a vacation for a week, which is fun.
That's fun for them.
What I really loved about it is that it's really fun to get counsel from both of them at the same time, I find, because Adam has this, like, optimistic, loves, positive, like, no notes on anything. And I really love when Sven is like, hey, let's just keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on
You're
that.
You're going to want to keep an eye on that.
You're going to want to keep an eye on that. I'm just saying. And he's so coy about how he shares it too, which makes me laugh, because he often will be like, and you have to be like, what? What?
What's the face?
What's
the mug?
What's the face? What's the mug? Tell me. Yeah. And usually I'm like, I've clocked it too. So I like that. Mm-hmm. It's good. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. Mm-hmm. I have to say, we've gotten a lot of engagement on our recent Patreon, which involves stories of me dating, and very fun. Thank you for your support so much in that endeavor. I do find that maybe keeping the dating stories to Patreon is probably better just for fear of people listening in, because do I be transparent and say that happens? What I found out since our last recording was that anyone can listen to my podcast. And I say a lot of things on the podcast, and maybe, just maybe, I shouldn't say all the things on the free podcast, but I'll say all the things on the paid podcast.
Yeah.
Is that the lesson we learned? Is that the lesson we learned? I don't know. Quinn, no opinion on that.
No. I got excited to, like, look at some of the... I was like, oh, I haven't looked. I'm barely screeching by here.
Listen, I hear you. I see you. Oh, I have a fun announcement that I want to say to any of our listeners out in Los Angeles.
My show,
Six Chick Flicks, is coming back. It's going to be at UCB LA November 4th.
She's bringing sexy back.
Yeah. And I'm going, and I'll be there November 4th. And so the idea is we all vote in the midterm elections. November 4th is election day. And then instead of sitting watching the returns come in, come and giggle at a chick flick parody. That's what I think you should do. Tickets will be on sale soon, and we'll let you know. Wait, there was something. Quinn, yesterday was
a big day for this
day
family.
Of school. Yes. It was a huge day for your family.
It was so nice to see the difference between yesterday, where Griff was really sensitive and had a really hard morning and a lot of tears and was very like, I don't want to go to school. I don't want to go to kindergarten. I'm a baby. And I was like, you're not a baby. We went and he kind of, you know, held back a little, but he went in and he did a good job. And then at the end of the day, I was like, how was school? And he whispered, I love my class. And I was like, good.
That happened then, last night?
Yeah. When I picked him up, like right when I picked him up from school. And then this morning he was like, I don't want to go. And I was like, yeah. And then he was like, wait. And he started listing kids. He's like, will Camilla be there? I was like, yeah. And he's like, will Andrew be there? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, oh, huh. I do want to go. And I'm like, yeah. They're going to come every day like you. And it's crazy that what are you picturing? And then we got there and they're letting the parents the first couple of weeks we can be in the schoolyard with them. Otherwise, it's more like a drop and wave situation.
Right.
Where you can see them through a gate. But now we're in the schoolyard, which is great because you can watch a little bit of the dynamics you're not usually able to see. And oh my God, it was so cute. Griff went up to one of the little boys and he goes, excuse me, if there was a skeleton in your room, would you jump out the window? And the little boy goes, oh, yes. And then another boy goes, oh, me too, me too. And then Griff looked at me and goes, see, Mama, this is what we do. This is what we talk about. And I go, it's awesome. And he's like, and did you hear? Did you hear the boy say yes to me? And I'm like, I did. And he's just like, really, and had like this most self-satisfied smile where he was like, aww, this is my world. Welcome. We talk about skeletons.
Glad I was like, you can enter into my space.
I was like, I do too. Like, that's my world too, Griff. I love talking about skeletons.
It's the same. It's so crazy to me because my nephew started kindergarten and he's a full year older, like to the day, than Griff.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister-in-law sent me this photo of him and it makes me really happy because my nephew has like a very like funny sense of style.
Very cool.
Really sporty. Cool. He's wearing sporty shorts over pants with his high tops and his White Sox hat and his face is like, I got this.
Yeah, he's got and this. He knows he's got this.
But it's interesting because he's a full year older than Griff.
Yeah, most kids are that are in kindergarten. Griff's 4. You know,
because what's the cutoff date?
For New York, it's the end of the year. It's December 31st.
It's so crazy that it's that different. It's mm-hmm. so wild to me.
Yeah, because, you know, like Frida, one of Griffin's besties, they're only born a couple weeks apart, and she's a full year behind him because she lives in New Jersey. So it's like she's going into pre-K. He's going into kindergarten.
Wow.
I think about how weird that'll be when Jordan and I are old and I'm like, oh, Griff's going to college. And she's like, well, Frida's still here another year going to high school. Like, that's really weird too, right?
Does it make you feel jealous because you want him home longer?
Yeah, I think I'm going to make him, both my kids do a gap year.
Gap year?
Yeah. No, like, although like, it's always funny. I catch myself doing this and then I'm like, are they going to go to college? Who knows? Like, why am I imposing that? I really like, obviously, like, I had a lot of fun in college. I want them to go, but I'm also like,
you've
don't
had so much
know
fun
what
in
the world
that you keep
be.
Going back. You keep That's going true. Back to college. You now have this is going to be your third degree.
Maybe
right?
We'll go together.
I love that.
Maybe
this
we can get
fun.
A dorm room together.
That is actually, I think, what you're going to do. Yeah. And I don't know if it's for the education, for the college, or just because you're like, hey, guys, I really still want to hang out.
Let's hang.
Guys, let's hang.
What would be better than having your mom with you in college?
I mean, I think some moms might not be fun, but I feel like you'd be a fun mom in college.
Now, when you said that, I totally got like an image of Amy Poehler in Mean Girls, where I'm like, come on, you guys, let's do shots. Like, I'm just like wearing a belly shirt.
You're buying
like,
everyone beer.
Trying to get, yeah, I'm like, let me come to college with you. I'll buy everybody drinks.
Please like so me. Please horrible. Be my friend.
Oh, God.
You know that feeling like, did you ever, would your mom, I assume, I'm not, you know, I shouldn't assume. I love my parents. I have a wonderful relationship with my parents. My parents were never concerned about me being their friend.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the marker of a healthy relationship. I don't think... Although,
some
like,
people...
The weirdest thing is that, like, right now you are. When your kids are really little, you are their friend because you're, like, playing with them. And then hopefully they get old enough that they make friends their own age and they want to hang out with them because it's a little more natural because they get a sense of, oh, you want to do the same thing I'm doing. I don't know. Well, it's a little weird. It's a little weird to be like, I'm not your friend in the sense that I get it. I get the idea is you are a person that is in charge of setting boundaries and making rules. So it's a hierarchy. It can't be an equal system in this certain way. But at the same time, you're also trying to project a feeling of equality all the time in the household. And like, we are equal, and like, we're, this is a democracy, and like, all we make decisions as a family together. Yeah. And we do things as a family that make sense for everybody. And I don't know. It's a hard line to straddle. I'll say that.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. I think it was early on when I went to therapy that I was talking, I think I was mentioning the relationship in Gilmore Girls, and I was like, what the hell was that? Like, so who needs a mom? What's going on there? That feels good. What's going on? And my therapist was like, sometimes like people love that. That's a very polarizing thing. Cause some people were raised where they're like, my mom is my best friend, or my love, mm-hmm. my, like, we tell each other everything, which like, I think that's also a nice thing too, to have such trust in someone that you like tell them everything, like you treat them like your best friend. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine though that, but I think the boundaries part is where it gets tough in that, when you're telling someone everything and you're like, how do I also guide you and have power, authority, I guess powers, but authority. Anyway, Quinn is starting school and the boys start school and it's all very exciting. I think we need to sing to some Patreon members.
Okay,
let's we have one, hold on, two, three, four, five. So maybe we do
two.
Okay, the first one today is gonna be Amber. Amber alert, it's an Amber alert for our friend Patreon. Amber, you're a star, we love to see you shining far. Amber, thank you for being here.
Amber, slow down, you're at a yellow light. Amber, move fast, it's gonna be all right. Amber.
Why does it feel so creepy when you do it?
I give you this weird face too, where I'm like,
it's such direct eye contact, you guys. If you know, everybody's like, do you put your podcast on video? And I say, absolutely.
You should
not.
See Quinn's face. We can't do it.
It's not possible. Have faces for radio in this, and so we're keeping it pure. We're keeping it pretty contained.
It would
keeping
take
it tight.
So much longer, by the way, to get ready to record if I knew we were gonna film this and release the film. Like, I would be like, oh God. Here we go.
Do you remember when we were at Crime of a Lifetime and they were like, we've put all the footage on YouTube? And you're like, what? It would have been nice.
We just look like we're reading. It's so insane.
It was fun. Hey, it was actually, though, it was really fun while it lasted. Oh, I look back and I
go, the good old
Quinn
days.
And I look back and I go,
paycheck.
A paycheck a year. Ooh, we lived a life, man.
We used to go out to dinner.
Oh, we would go out to dinner. Although Quinn made an excellent dinner last night. We combined our clams and it was a clam time. It was a clam of a time.
A clam of a time.
Okay. Maria, Maria, Maria.
How do you solve a Patreon like Maria?
Maria.
You make content for her every single week.
Every month.
And you try your hardest, even though you have to stay up late. And sometimes you barely do the research.
Maria. Okay. I think that felt good.
Welcome
Thank
to
you,
Truly Darkly.
Darkly.
I'm Canva.
Okay, I guess it's time for me to tell a story. Story for Carrie. Gotta tell a story. Gotta tell a story, Carrie. Why am I doing this?
Good.
Doing
this I'll research while you're doing that.
I'm just kidding. How long is your story? Because I do have to do some last minute research. So
could you tell a long one while I research?
Can you tell a long one? I'm gonna mute myself and I'll just come in and I'll just at the end of the episode I'll go,
see it coming. Huh? And you'll be like, what?
It'll be like the most predictable story.
You're like, it was 9/11. I'm like,
hey, you want to know the irony of that, Quinn?
It's 9/11.
This episode is coming out on 9/12.
Oh God. Oh, how insensitive. Ugh. Damn it. It's always too soon with 9/11. That's the hard lesson you learn. It's always too soon.
Well, in this special 9/11 episode of Truly.
Should I
I'm
talk
just like
about...
backstepping out of the room.
I have to tell you a story before we move on, which tell is me. That when we got home from a weekend away, this was on the porch right outside my door.
Shut the fuck up. Okay, Quinn is holding up an envelope that just says open me with a smiley face.
This is what was inside it. First of all, it was like you open... It's written for someone that doesn't know how to use an envelope, because then you open it and it's like, yeah, no, I know. Like, there's an arrow on it for like how you open an envelope. And I was like, oh no, I've done that before. Thanks. Then you open it.
Done that before. Thanks. Okay. It says, you can't add days to your life, but you can add life to your days. And it looks like it's a hand.
That's the whole contents. It's got like some highlighter around the outside and some little shapes doodled, and it's handwritten and it has no note from who it's from. So then Spencer went back in the frick fracking ring. Don't recognize the person. It's like just a woman. And you're like, I don't know who that is.
I'm going to go.
What do we think? Because it's not even like a Jesus answer.
Let Jesus in. I think it's just someone who's like probably trying to spread the good word of adding life to your days as opposed to days to your life. And
yeah, you don't often get little pieces of mail, motivational mail from strangers.
Now, was there powder in it? Is it thallium? Was there a thallium in it?
Right. Should I have not brought it in? I mean,
was it on
also
your
like,
door?
That's right.
It wasn't on the boy.
Nope.
So do you think anti-gay?
I don't know what to think.
That is so... How long ago did you get... And you haven't gotten anything else since then?
No, and we got it last weekend.
Okay.
I just had to share with you because there's been a lot of mysteries around the house.
Yeah, did you ever find about the boots or the flippy flops?
Certainly not.
This is weird.
What's happening? It's kind of spooky.
It's spooky, and it all seems like
very... It's for sure kooky.
It all seems so mundane, too. It doesn't seem like it has any sort of...
None of it's like actually scary, but it's just you're like, this is what I'd like to call... weird.
Okay. Well, dear readers, write in if you have any idea if you've also received an open me envelope with an arrow to the flap of which you need to open. That's why I'm like, this seems like it also, the handwriting doesn't seem childish, but it doesn't seem also old. Like, I feel like it would be cursive if it was old. It's a hippy dippy 20-year-old who's like, I'm spreading good works through the world. What did the person look like in the video?
I'll send it to you.
Let's post it online. We're going to post it online.
Here, tell me if you... Wait, here, I'm sending it to you.
Whoa. Really weird. And she has a list. She has a stack of them.
She does?
Yes, in her
That's
hand.
That's really useful to know. It's like...
I see. It's like she has...
It ain't poison.
There's like two... Like this. There's two... Let me show this. There's probably a better way to do this, but I'm not interested in finding it. See, she has two piles in her hands. Do you see?
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, that makes... I like that then. I'm like, yeah, go around, spread the good word.
But it's weird that she didn't give one to Adam and Sven. I feel like they, you know... But maybe they're already positive and
She's probably like, I know that guy. He's doing it right already.
He's like, no notes. I have no notes for that couple.
I know that couple. No notes.
You said Quinn and Matt. Quinn and Matt. Let's give them
Let me give them a little advice.
I actually, like, after your summer, I don't know if anybody needs to give you advice. I feel like your summer was wonderful. And I think you've added a lot of life to your days this summer. Like, I can't imagine. Right? Like, I don't think there's nowhere I'm like, wow, Quinn and Matt, they don't make time for each other in the family. Like, I would never say that about you guys. So I'm like, that doesn't make sense.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
I got this information from Argus Leader. Is that right? Wow, what the fuck? Yeah, it's called Argus Leader. Sometimes you write down sources and I go, what?
Like, can that be a real thing?
Is that real? Argus Leader and CBS News. But Argus Leader had a lot because this took place in South Dakota. And so that's a local newspaper. And so they were popping off on their coverage of this case. So I'm going to introduce you to 41-year-old James McVeigh. The thing about James McVeigh is he has not had a good life. He was born to a mother who was addicted to heroin, and I believe she was using when he was in utero. Apparently, we will later find out that, like, his mom threw him in a pool to drown. She obviously lost custody. He was later adopted. And at 10 years old, he was given, he says, methamphetamine and heroin by his older brothers.
End? It's crazy. Like, drugs from such a young age, keep them to yourself.
I think the family was like cooking the meth and they were giving it to him, or they started with weed. But either way, between 10 and 12 is like when he started using drugs. And this is obviously when the brain is developed and it has massive effects on him. Additionally, because he was a child, he was in utero when his mother was using, he is more prone to addiction, right? So it's like we're having all of these compounded, all this compounded exposure to drugs is obviously going to affect him in life. This leads him to a life of crime, of drug use. His crimes will span three states, and he has eight felonies by the time he's 41, and he's spent most of his time in and out of prisons. And what's important to note is at this point, these crimes are nonviolent. These felonies are nonviolent and mostly drug-related. So he's someone who's been incarcerated quite a bit, and he does have he obviously has mental health stuff. He has addiction. It's May 2011, and he's in a South Dakota minimum security prison. And while he's there, he's experiencing some mental illness distress. And while he's in prison, he's in isolation. So he was diagnosed with psychosis, but he declines mental health treatment for 2 months while he's in segregation in the prison. And while this is happening, he's creating this like very bizarre assassination plot against Barack Obama. He said he was not necessarily, he said he didn't have any hatred for Obama, but he felt that oh God, it's hard even to say this. He felt that in 2011, we were falling into a police state and Obama didn't have the strength to stand up to the powers that were trying to overrun the country, which is just like an interesting anecdote because of where we are at currently. So he's declined mental health treatment. He's coming up with this plot. He is transferred to a community transition program to enter back into society. And July 1st, 2011, he leaves the South Dakota State Penitentiary's Community Transition Program unit. He goes to Walmart. He shoplifts. He shoplifts a knife, cold pills, liquor, clothes. And he spends the rest of the night getting high on these cold pills where he is starting to have these hallucinations. He will later say that he took this to give him courage to go forth with the plan, and that these drugs, when he took them, he felt like Superman. He sleeps overnight in a park. The next day, he says that Lucifer guided him to the home of 75-year-old Maybelle Sheen in Southern Sioux Falls. Maybelle is a semi-retired hospice nurse. So this is a woman who is truly helping people transition out of, helping people transition to death. She is a saint. She is a wonderful person who does not deserve any of this. James sneaks under her garage door. He enters into her home. He slashes her throat in bed. He stabs her 9 times. They say that because of how he cut her throat, she dies in 16 seconds. He then steals her car with the plans to drive to Washington, D.C. to assassinate Barack Obama. He does not get that far. By the time they find Maybelle's body, they're able to track him and they find him in Madison, Wisconsin, where he is captured. When he is arrested, he is obviously going through mental health distress. He tells the arresting officer that he had taken pleasure in the murder because Mabel was a Christian, and while he killed her, he taunted her and she fought for her life. Although later he will say that he made this up, that that's not what happened. Okay. After his arrest, he starts lashing out at the police officers, saying he wanted to kill them. He also is saying that he wants the death penalty because he had been left alone to bask in the grandiose fantasies of martyrdom. Mm-hmm. It's very clear from everyone who interacts with this person that this person is profoundly unwell. In the days following the murder, a newspaper finds James' brother, and his brother will say that his brother deserves the death penalty. Once he is in jail, and it seems like maybe he is on medication while he's in prison, he finds out more of this, the life of the woman whose life he took.
Yeah.
He finds out that she was a nurse who cared for the terminally ill, and he becomes incredibly upset, incredibly remorseful. And while in jail, it's so insane. This case was so crazy to me because this is an unwell person who we let back into society. The recourse for this person, I'll keep telling you because I think it's important for you to know. So he starts to express remorse. He's devastated that she was someone who helped people. Mm-hmm. Because he's on medication, he's able to see a little bit more clearly that what he was doing was not right. At the same time, he went and he took the medication to put him into this altered hallucinogenic state. And he did these crimes, right? So he is responsible for them.
Yeah.
2 months after her death, he had been squirreling away antipsychotic medication, and he tries to kill himself. He tries mm-hmm. to overdose on this medication. Mm-hmm. He had said that a psychiatrist at the time said that James decided that he deserved to die, and he was not interested in this assassination plot, this grandiose mm-hmm. plot that he had. He survived his suicide attempt in jail, and he said that what changed his mind was that he wanted to offer something to the other mentally ill inmates. So he felt like there was a higher calling for him. Mm-hmm. By December 2011, he pleads guilty but mentally ill to first-degree murder. By March 2014, the trial happens. At that point, the jury has to decide if he could get the death penalty. The jury will also decide if the death penalty is up for debate in this case. Okay. His defense is driven by his psychosis, that he has a mental illness that bubbled over into this bizarre assassination attempt during these 2 months of isolation at the penitentiary. Yeah. They also outline his traumatic upbringing, that his brain is not fully developed. They also credit that in prison, he's not receiving mental health treatment, and so everything gets exacerbated. He was cross-examined at the trial, which I found interesting, and he admitted in this cross-examination that he lied to the Department of Corrections and mental health staff to earn his freedom for his chance to kill, and that he'd pondered killing gang members and child molesters in prison, and that he saw his 2011 plan to assassinate President Barack Obama as a sacrifice of himself. He said, "I wanted to help people I didn't know." And then he talks about his suicide attempt in jail, where he said, "The more I learned about Maybelle, the more I wanted to die." Mm-hmm. At trial, he does reveal that he is sorry, of course, for what he has done. But he said, "Sorry or apology seems so absurd to give them in place of what I took from them." For his suicide attempt, he also talks about how it was his attempt to take responsibility for what he'd done and to save South Dakota taxpayers from the expense of housing him and putting him on trial. There were also moments, now, it does sound like he is an apologetic shell going, "I was sick. it is clear in these cross-examinations also that he is a bit combative and argumentative. So when they ask him, when the attorney asks him, so you're not dangerous? He says, if I'm dangerous, why am I not handcuffed? He holds up his hands for the jury to see. Yeah. If I wanted to hurt somebody, there are plenty of people here to hurt. Have I hurt anybody? No. He also butted heads repeatedly with the prosecutor, and the prosecutor would talk about twisting words and focusing on the worst things that he did. And the prosecutor said, you're good at manipulation, aren't you? And James replies, apparently you are too. While he's also admitting that he has remorse for this, it seems like he's someone who is just as having, I don't know what the prognosis is of this person. I don't believe anyone is beyond repair, but like he is someone that they're just, it's a bit of a head scratcher, right? There's also, he does reveal that in 2009, he hoped to also kill Vice President Joe Biden at the time. The jury deliberates. The case is pretty quick. They come back. The jury finds him guilty, and they do sentence him to the death penalty. During the trial, the jurors first decided that the killing of Maybelle qualified for the death sentence under South Dakota's law because it was committed to obtain something of value, her car, and it was wantonly vile or inhuman. And they also heard at the time of his interactions with correctional officers after the fact that he wanted to kill them. So he goes to jail to wait his sentence. I don't think he is on death row yet, but he is receiving now mental health care. In South Dakota, all death sentences have to be reviewed by the South Dakota Supreme Court. And after he received the death penalty, he was in agreement with that ruling. He said he wants South Dakota to execute him. That was somehow a part of fulfilling his plan. Maybelle's family are also happy with this decision. They say they think it's important that we can feel as though no one else will ever be harmed the way she was in her bed. Him dying will protect society. September 3rd, 2014, not long after the sentence came down, at 6:50 in the morning, correctional officers go and check on James McVeigh in prison, and they find him profoundly injured from a suicide attempt. They administer CPR, they call the ambulance, but it is too late. He is pronounced dead in prison. They do a full investigation into his death, and they maintain that it is a suicide. What's interesting is that typically, if someone is at suicide risk, they will do have precautions. Like they will have inmates wear brightly colored clothing. They have cameras installed in cells, and they receive additional checks by both prison and medical staff. But he was not considered at risk for suicide before he killed himself. When it was announced to this, when it was announced that he was dead, there are statements from both the prosecution and the defense, and I want to read both of them because I think, I just think it's interesting. The prosecution, the state's attorney, said, Mr. McVeigh was a deeply disturbed man. He made it very clear to us that he had very little respect for human life, including his own. Although we continue to mourn the loss of Miss Maybelle Sheen, we hope that Mr. McVeigh's decision to take his own life ends his horrible chapter in their lives and brings them closure. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the loved ones of Mr. McVeigh, as they clearly had to endure many years of turmoil and consternation. His defense attorney will say, in 21st century America, where we have the best forms of treatment for everything from cancer to heart disease, we still choose to believe that people can control whether they suffer from mental illness. We are saddened by the loss of someone who is not just a client, but our friend. We hope that the tragic loss of James McVeigh and Maybelle Sheen bring awareness to the epidemic of mental illness. Before I leave, I do want to talk a little bit more about Maybelle, because this was a needless life taken in a horribly tragic way. And I just want to highlight that she was a semi-retired hospice care nurse. She was someone who helped people, and her family does not want her to be remembered as a woman who was so brutally murdered. They said she gave so much to society. There is evidence that she herself was opposed to the death penalty. The defense tried to bring this up in court, but the court did not allow it because they're like, that's not relevant to this case. But Maybelle Sheen will be remembered as a fun-loving woman who spent her life caring for others. The hospice nurse spent most of her career treating the poor, displaced, and downtrodden for tuberculosis. And that is the really devastating story of Maybelle Sheen and the man who killed her.
I got my information from People, mostly a couple articles, NBC and ABC, and Memphis Flyer and Oxygen. So we'll start in Horseshoe Lake, Arkansas in 1949. There is a mom and dad, Robert and Grace, and they have three girls and a boy, and they live in a really tiny cabin there. So they're like, what can we do? We just got to grow this thing. And they want to turn it into a grand, formal, fancy mansion house. And I guess they have the money because they hire this guy, Everett R. Wood, who is a very big deal architect. And they're like, can you turn this into a real showstopper? And Everett takes the job. This article that I read was like a Memphis architect piece on the house and its history. And it was really interesting, not necessarily for our purposes, but they talk a lot about how amazing all the fixtures are and how special it was. And this woman, Martha McKay, who was Grace and Robert's granddaughter, talks about her grandmother and how she was so impressed by how graceful and dignified and what a lady she was. And she said, I just had never met anyone like her. So she really looked up to her. Sally, who is Martha's mom, she ends up marrying a professional actor. And his name is David McKay. And they only live on the property for a few years and then decide to move to San Francisco. And they take their kids with them. And while the grandparents were alive, they would have the kids go back to Horseshoe. And it sounds like they would drop the kids off there almost like camp. Martha talks really fondly of that and says, it was, I felt like a princess. There was all these people that were like, there's a huge staff and we're in this big house. And they're bringing fresh eggs in from the morning from the chickens, and there's peach trees growing on the property. Mm. We can swim. It's basically summer camp. Grace dies in 1989 at 91, and Robert dies a few years before her in 82. And they get buried on that property. And their maid, Bessie, also buried on that property next to them. And then they put boxwood trees planted in a circle around these tombstones. And Grace, on her tombstone, it says, a gay and grateful heart.
Oh,
cute.
And I love that.
Bob's is in Latin, and it says, Dom Spiro Sparrow. Dom Spiro Sparrow.
Which we all know means,
while I dominatrix, breathe, I hope.
Bird.
That's right.
What is it?
While I breathe, I hope.
Oh, that's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Which is kind of a weird thing to put on a tombstone, because you're like, you're not breathing. So... have you lost? Is it like, I've lost hope? Could you just write that then?
Have we I've made lost the hope. Joke? Have we made the joke where it's like, if you just write pepperoni?
Oh, right.
What Ooh. Do you want on your tombstone?
Yeah.
Pepperoni. Good one, Carrie.
That would be such a, oh, somebody would do that on the way out, I bet. Be
like, someone's meh. Got to. They can't be the, we can't be the first one.
After the grandparents die, Bob and Grace, then their daughter takes over managing the property. And there's all these cabins on the property, I think probably where staff lives as well. And she divides them up between the family members and says, you can do whatever you want with your share of that. I don't really want to be in charge. And all the family members that inherit something decide that they're going to put it together and call it the big partnership or the company. And they're not totally sure what they're going to do with this land yet. Sally's not super interested in sticking around where she grew up. Martha was so impacted by her time growing up, coming to this house, even though she didn't necessarily live there full time, that when she goes to college, she goes to University of Washington, and she has to write a thesis. And she writes a thesis called Four Generations of Southern Women. And she pretty much writes it about her grandma and this house. And it just meant the world to her. Then tragedy strikes, and in 1996, Martha's mom, Sally, is 75 at the time, and Lee Baker, who is a Memphis blues guitarist and also a cousin of the family's, are in this home and are shot. The police are questioning people about who could have committed this murder, and there's a guy named Edric Smith, who's 20 years old, that they question. They are pretty much thinking it's him, and they were very aggressive with him, and they're telling him that. They're like, we think it's you. He keeps being like, I hope you get whoever killed this lady. And they give him a polygraph. They take his prints, and it ends up that after some looking closer at what happened, they're like, we actually think it was your 16-year-old brother that did it. So I guess it's a troubled family, but Travis Lewis, who is 16 at the time, does end up pleading guilty on September 10th of 1996 to what were called the Horseshoe Lake murders, killing Martha's mom and her and Martha's mom's nephew, I guess, her cousin, Joseph Lee Baker. And it sounds like the motive, although we're not totally clear on it, he was very young, was that he wanted to rob the house, and then he came in, had to kill them, then he sets the building on fire, which doesn't result in the destruction of the building. He does plead guilty, but he also pleads guilty but doesn't confess. So he pleads guilty and says it was somebody else. I don't totally know how that works, but at the time of the sentencing, this whole family is actually feeling like Lewis is really young. They're not sure if he actually did it because he's saying he didn't. So they're opposing capital sentence. And Martha, even though it's her mother that was killed, actually takes on, I don't want to say friendship, but maybe mentorship. She definitely goes to the prison a lot to visit Travis. Mm-hmm. She's reads a lot of about Buddhism and thinks about that a lot. And I think it informs this idea of forgiveness. And Lewis is sentenced to almost 29 years in prison. And they say he's going to have to serve at least 70% of it. That's part of the plea bargain. After Sally is dead, this guy named Eddie takes over managing the property. And it's a really, really huge job. And Martha knows that, and she has all these memories. Like I told you, she wrote her thesis about this home. She has a lot of feelings about it. And so she decides to come back and close it down because they were managing it as a B&B. And she closes it down and renovates the hell out of it, makes it sort of her life's work. She puts so much in and makes it this completely beautiful place that they're very, very proud of. And she starts to, again, use it as a property that they're renting to people, having a hotel, but also big events, parties, weddings, reunions. And it's called Snowden House, and people will rent it. And it's this gorgeous lakefront property that matters so much to her. So it was big that she came back to it and ended up being the sole owner of it. She bought it from all the people that were a piece of that like big partnership, estate, like all the families that had owned it. She was like, I really want to take this over. I want to make it my life and my business. And so she did. And it's super upscale bed and breakfast. And it was even the location used in the movie The Client in 1994. Oh. So it's like people are like, this is a gorgeous house. We're going to even use it in a feature film. So meanwhile, she's opened up this home, this business. She's visiting Travis Lewis in prison, and he ends up being paroled after 23 years. So in 2018, and they still continue this friendship. And the sheriff at the time is speculating that it might be because Martha wants to get to the bottom of who did kill Sally, her mother. Mm-hmm. So she's befriending this guy because she's like, I feel like he was a kid at the time, but he might know something. And she's like, you know what? Do you want to work at the house? We have job availabilities. Do you and your mom?
Where he apparently murdered people before.
Her mother. And she's like, do you want to work there? And he's like, yes. And she hires him and his mom, Gladys, who had been a housekeeper already, like prior. or maybe was a housekeeper while he was in prison. But basically, she's like, I'm hiring you. I'm hiring your mother. You guys can work at Snowden House. And Gladys, even to Martha, is like, are you sure you want to do this? She basically says, you know, Travis, he might have just gotten out, but you might want to stay away. We're not sure what's going to happen. He could go back to the way he used to be. It's been 20 years. Like, he was 16 and it's been a couple of decades. So Martha really believes in second chances.
Wow.
But there's a chandelier in the house that's really old, and in the name of renovation and making money to keep pouring into the property, Martha sells the chandelier, and it sells for something like $10,000, and she puts the money somewhere in the house, and then the money vanishes and she fires Travis because I think she knew something, she suspected something, but she's like, you're out of here as soon as that money vanishes. And it's not long after that, in March of 2020, that they find Martha's body in the house. She's been stabbed and bludgeoned. She's wrapped in a blanket. She's found at the top of the stairs. And they find a bag nearby that has valuables and one of the kitchen knives that's bloody. And it feels like, again, like someone was trying to make a robbery and killed Martha. So they go after Travis, who's on the property at the time, and they chase him, and he jumps out a window, runs to a car that's on the property, gets in, tries to start the car doesn't start, gets out of the car, runs, they give chase, and he jumps. This is a lakeside house. He jumps in the lake, and they see him go under, and he never comes back up. So they call Arkansas Game and Fish, whatever.
Wildlife, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they, because they have sonar equipment. So they come and start searching the lake, and they find his body. And they're like, what? Oh my God, this is Travis. And when they see him, like, I think in the height of the moment in chasing this person, where it's like, this woman was killed, someone's in the house, he's jumping out a window, he's running to a car, he's jumping in a lake. It's like, it's all pretty fast. And not till they pull the body out are they like, wait a minute, this is Travis Lewis. This is deja vu. He's now 39 years old and we're back at this house and he's committed another murder of this woman's daughter trying to rob the same house he did when he was 16. And they perform an autopsy and he has cocaine and meth and weed in his system. And it's like, yes, he was on drugs, but Gladys was like, you should stay away from him. She hires him and then finds the same fate as her mother years after her mother's death.
Do we know for sure if he did it? Like, is there any question if he did it?
No, I don't think there's any question of whether he killed. I mean, I don't know much about the really old case, and it feels like he maintained his innocence. That's probably why she gave him a job. But, and I don't know a lot about that first case. Like, there wasn't any, I didn't read a thing that was like, and here's why they knew Travis had killed Sally. However, there's no doubt, and in 2020 with DNA evidence and everything they had and him running the way he did, there's no reason to believe that he didn't do it. The order of operations being also that it seems like he was hired, he stole from her, she fired him, he came back to the house to steal more, he killed her. Like, it's pretty clean. But Martha's sister says she just can't wrap her mind around how this happened twice. And she says Martha didn't deserve to be killed. She didn't deserve anything that happened to her. And everything you read about her, these architecture articles where she's talking about her love for the home and the land and giving back to it and making it this beautiful place where people came to celebrate all these occasions, and to have it be this house that is so haunted by tragedy and have the same tragedy essentially happen twice, 25 years apart, is so devastating. And the element of, I forgave my mother's killer and then he killed me. Like, that the is, idea, like, there's no lesson, like the wrong lesson is so upsetting.
Lesson. Yeah. Oh, God. That's so sad. What's going on with the house now?
Oh, good question. And I should look it up. What did I say it was called? Snowden House?
Snowden House.
Snowden House now.
I mean, two crimes at that house, too. Two murders.
It has... Oh, it looks like it has an Instagram page, actually. Under the canopy of stately oak trees along the bank of Horseshoe Lakes, it's a historic home and venue. Perfect for your next event. And it's the last picture was posted, 2017, before the murder. 3 years before this murder. So, sheesh, it's like Snowden House... Horseshoe Lake now. Horseshoe Lake, Arkansas. I don't know. It's a historic mansion that has been... AI is like, this is a historic mansion that has been the site of multiple murders. 24 years apart, committed by the same perpetrator. And that it was featured in The Client, and that it was... Oh, it says previously operated as a bed and breakfast and wedding venue before its closure. So, yeah, you're sort of like, how could the house survive two murders? No one will want... Like, could you imagine booking it for a wedding? Like, it just feels like it's like this site of devastation.
I think I would imagine you would book it as a wedding.
Oh, yeah. The Snowden House is now permanently closed. So very strange. I wonder if it will like fall into disrepair or what. Hard to say.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's really, really sad.
Really sad. Thanks for telling that story, though.
You're welcome. Sorry that I told it in the wrong order. I think
nothing a little post-production can cure up.
All right. Well, should we start our days?
We should start our days.
Just with a little... If that doesn't jumpstart your engine...
What a morning. Who needs coffee?
We've already had.
Who needs coffee?
Who needs coffee when you've got murder? Well, I hope you guys have a great day, and I'm sorry I had to tell that story, but it's my... job.
I mean, we both told sad stories today. Both two stories, two sad stories. And here we are.
Work harder to do better. Work harder.
We'll be better. Okay, bye, y'all.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.